This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 195, where AC and I are going to recap the Build Conference 2017, recorded live Monday, the May 15th, 2017.
Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Microsoft Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, the competitive landscape, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Chris Johnson.
And I'm Andrew Connell.
Send us a tweet either to the show at MS Cloud Show or to Chris at LoungeflyZ.
Or to Andrew at Andrew Connell.
As we'd love to connect with you. We're just two dudes telling you how we see it.
The Microsoft Cloud Show is sponsored by Valid.nl. Valid's motto is stay ahead. Its mission is to enable its customers to excel in their business through the innovative use of IT. Valid is always on the lookout for new colleagues. If you're interested in all things happening in Azure, whether in infrastructure, SQL Server, Office 365, Power BI, SharePoint, or .NET, look them up on valid.nl. AC!
CJ!
I didn't know what day it was there for a second.
Yeah, well, we had talked about doing more shows coming from Build, and I guess our plans didn't exactly come out the way we wanted to, so it's a little bit of a curveball at us this week.
Yeah, exactly. So yes, apologies for balking up the date, but how are things anyway?
Things are good, man. Things are good. It's the week post-Build. I know you enjoyed your time out there. I watched from afar. Don't feel like I missed a whole lot from not being there in person. Would have been nice to see some people, but things are good, man. Things are good. I've got a couple things that, you know, before we get into the news that I'm doing that I'm getting some things ready this week. As next week, I am heading to Belgium for my first time ever. I'm going to Antwerp to go speak at a conference called Techorama.
That sounds pretty exciting.
I did some research on the show. I got invited to speak there. I'm doing a full-day workshop on Angular 2, Angular 4. So it's all hands-on workshop and stuff. And I did the same thing in Chicago, and I'm just trying to spice up a little bit and make it a little bit easier for people to follow along so that when they take the workshop, if they get behind or they screw stuff up, I'll have tags and a bunch of spot in a repo so that they can just jump straight to a part where we are in the workshop if they had screwed stuff earlier, and hey, they know that everything's working again. So doing that today. And then, so that's the big thing. So I'm looking forward to going to that and then doing a couple other breakout sessions, one on Office using Angular 4 for a Office Outlook add-in, and also doing one on building web parts, client-side web parts for the SharePoint framework.
Very nice.
Yeah, so those are those two. And then I think the other thing that we're doing, I guess, is this week that you and I, that we've got is by the time this episode comes out, a few hours after this episode comes out, Microsoft is doing their second annual virtual SharePoint event. So that they're kind of using this as their big kind of coming out party for a bunch of stuff. So should interested to see what kind of announcements they have out of this, not only for just SharePoint in itself, but also for developers. I assume that we kind of saw everything last week at Build with some of their announcements. But I'm doing something also that's kind of timing at the same. It's kind of going along with the same time here. And I'm launching a new series through my Voitanos site. So I'll be up on a Voitanos YouTube channel and also on the Voitanos blog. And then if you also subscribe to my blog, you'll see me at least highlight what this is. But I interviewed over the last month a bunch of people who are seasoned SharePoint developers. People likes of Eric Shupps, Mark Rackley, Mark Anderson, Julie Turner, Eric Overfield, Corey Roth. I'm going to forget some names off the top of my head now, which I probably shouldn't have started naming names. Bob German, Victor Whelan, Wes Hackett. Man, I think I got everybody. I hope I did. Those are little interviews between like 5 and 8 minutes, and I'll be publishing those. And it's the title of the series is the SharePoint framework in their own words. And so I asked them, each of them, a handful of questions and let them kind of just riff on what they thought about the stuff. So it'll be posted as YouTube videos. I have three of them going live this week on the day this episode comes out. So today, Tuesday, May the 16th, one on the Wednesday the 17th, one on Thursday the 18th. And then for the next 4 weeks, I'll have two more come out every week on Tuesday and Thursday So two a week coming out every week for the, after that, to kind of just get what, you know, what do people think about the SharePoint framework? So, yeah, it's just let them kind of riff on and do their own thing. So if you're interested in that, just watch my blog and, so you can see updates on those.
Excellent. Exciting.
How about you, man?
Set of content.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah. No, just, obviously at Build last week and, that was Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. We're going to talk a little bit more about that in a wee bit, but that was pretty much it. I got a little bit of work done earlier in the week and some stuff at night, but other than that, it was mostly at Build. But it's also worth pointing out or recapping for people that may have missed it in previous shows about our special episode 200 giveaway that we're running. So if you haven't listened to the last show or two, we announced that we're running a competition for episode 200. So what you go do, what you have to do, I should say, that was a bit of a Kevin Turnerism, go do's. you have to go record a 30-second piece about why you like the show, what you like about it, what were your favorite moments, what you don't like about it is okay as well. Try to make it funny and personable and things. We're going to sift through all of the entries. Oh, so you've got to send it to us. So you've got to go up to our site and click the contact button and then paste a URL into the waiver MP3. And the reason we need it as a waiver and MP3 is so that for the winning entries, we can play them on the show. And so we're going to listen to them all. We're going to sift through the entries. We've had some absolutely hilarious ones so far, which I thought was pretty cool. And people are surprisingly creative, actually. Very good. Good work on the creativity side so far. Anyway, so we're going to sift through them, listen to them all, and we're going to pick three winners. The first place winner is going to get one of Microsoft's spanky new Surface laptops, which I managed to get a chance to play with at the Build conference last week. And that's a pretty slick piece of hardware, I've got to say. It was pretty nice. Mm. And then the two runners-up get a Xbox One S bundle that we're going to send them as well. So be in to win some kick-ass hardware prizes and some goodies.
Yeah, and for those of you who are interested in jumping in on this too, I mean, like CJ said, you know, you gotta send us a recording that we can use to play on the air, and you also have to be on our mailing list as well. So if you go to the website, there's a spot where you can log in, or you can give us your email address and get on the mailing list. And we do need all of these in by Friday, May the 26th. So when this episode comes out, it's coming out on the 16th of May. That gives you another 10 days. So basically the rest of this week and all of next week, we need them in by then. Don't be discouraged. You know, hey, there's no chance I'm going to get picked. We haven't had a ton of submissions just yet. I assume we'll get some towards the end. But I don't want to tip you on what people are doing. But let's just say the more unique and the more creative. I know that CJ one or two that CJ and I just kind of like cocked our head like, wow, I did not expect that to come in, but it's pretty cool. It was really cool.
So. Yeah. People have been good about getting creative so far. So that's really cool. But yeah, definitely get them in. It's pretty straightforward just to record a 30-second clip and go hit us up on our contact form. Really easy. Just drop it in your Dropbox and get a public link and then send it to us. That way is probably the simplest. Only a few steps. Do it in your car, on your phone, what have you. Doesn't really matter. Doesn't have to be high quality or anything like that. Just has to get it to us. So we would love to hear from you and obviously want you in the running to win a Surface laptop. One of the brand new ones not yet out from Microsoft, or one of the Xbox One S bundles that we've got, two of those.
Yep, absolutely.
Excellent. Now, before we move on, let's break to hear from one of our fantastic sponsors. While many IT teams struggle with the impact of deploying Office 365, Zscaler customers are experiencing 40% or greater network performance across file download times, as well as TCP and DNS connection times, compared to using next-gen firewalls and UTMs to route Office 365 traffic locally to the internet. While you may know Zscaler as a leader in cloud security, they also have hundreds of customers who are processing over 1.2 petabytes of Office 365 traffic monthly through the Zscaler cloud. Visit www.zscaler.com to learn more. Okay, AC, so last week we had Build Conference, obviously. I went to in person. It was here in Seattle. And we put out an episode last week about the day one keynote. But we thought we'd spend a few minutes talking about the conference and what happened at Build last week and get each other's thoughts on it and so forth. So I guess I was there. I had no choice but to be immersed in it. But how did you follow along, or what did you follow along with while you were over there in Florida?
Well, I fired up the I really just watched the keynotes, the two main keynotes from day one and day two, and then I tuned in here and there on the live feed that Seth Juarez for Channel 9, the Channel 9 show, what they were broadcasting. So I watched a couple of those live, and then running through Channel 9, finding sessions, finding interviews, short sessions as well, and then adding them to a queue and watching stuff. I was mostly interested in seeing a lot of news around anything developer-ish, which, I mean, it's Build, and cloudy stuff as well. So mostly cloudy stuff in the sense of Azure stuff. And, you know, we did the day one keynote recap, and we talked about doing a day two keynote recap, but what did you think about the day two keynote?
There was a day two keynote.
Yeah, God, that was boring. That was really boring.
I got a couple of thoughts about Build in general on this topic that sort of bugged me about the whole thing. Session wise, I thought the content was great. Like, as an attendee, I thought the content was actually pretty reasonable. The problem was I had with the keynotes, first and foremost. I thought they were very non-developer-y, and especially day two. Day one, a little bit. Day two, definitely. Day two was mostly about Windows. Mm. And so Terry Myerson got up and talked about what they're doing with the Windows 10 Fall Creators Update, which... first up, I thought it was a really strange place to announce the Fall Creators Update, just because it's a consumer-y Windows play for the most part. And I was like, huh? Why do the developers in this room care? They tied it a little bit back to development later in the keynote. But certainly to begin with, they led with talking about this new way of like editing and creating movies in Windows 10 with a new app that they've built. And I mean, don't get me wrong, the app was kind of cool. Like, it was pretty easy, and it was very touch friendly, and it was all of that. But I spent the whole time thinking, like, what the hell has this got to do with developers? Like, why are you telling us this? I think in a nutshell, it was a really long-winded way to get back to the point that they were trying to make, which was, you too can take advantage of some of these things that we're using to build this app and make it work across devices and all this sort of stuff. But they just weren't very in your face about that part of it. So there's been a lot of talk about this new application that you can use and things like that, but not as much time talking about, hey, here is the plumbing that makes this possible and the developer features that make this possible that you can take advantage of in your applications. They kind of got back to it with a lot of talk about the Microsoft Graph, which with this new thing called Project Roam, which was the ability to basically save contextual information from your application into the Microsoft Graph and have that roam across different application platforms, including like Android and iOS and so forth. But they just took a really obtuse and obscure way to get to that point, I thought.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I you know, you and I talked a little bit about this offline about the focus of of the keynotes not being as developer-ish. And I mean, I guess you and I have, we kind of both come at it from different angles. I mean, for me, I don't mind not seeing a lot of code in a keynote because, I mean, that's, to me, it's kind of like, show me what's possible. And then in a breakout, I can go in a little bit deeper, but I don't want to spend too much time on the code because, I mean, we've done developer sessions before and that takes a while to get through some of that stuff. And you're limited on how much time you got. So for me, the day one level of development stuff was a very good mix. I mean, there's very little code in it, which was fine with me, but everything was developer-ish. Day two, though, I agree. There were two things that I definitely wanted to talk about the day two keynote, but I agree with everything you just said. It was very boring. It took 35 or 40 minutes to see the first line of code. I don't need to see a ton, but I mean, it's build. I do want to see something. If you just show a semicolon, I mean, the two slashes for the build in the build logo isn't going to cut it on the lead-in slide. But it was very boring to me. I mean, and I know that there's Windows developers that are out there, and I know that that's not the crowd that you and I kind of run in. And so I kept trying to remind myself, going, look, this part is not for you. That was for day one, was cloudy stuff. That was for you. AI, that was for you. This part about Windows development, this isn't so much for you. And I'm sitting there watching it going, yeah, but I mean, seeing this thing about I think it's called Remix, is the app where you can build your own video and it knows how to sync stuff up and everything. That was a keynote video for for WPC or whatever the new name is for WPC for partners, or for Ignite. That wasn't
Inspire.
Inspire, yeah, that's the new WPC. Yeah. That stuff was boring to me. I liked the tie-in on Graph and the way that you can have app settings kind of roam around with you. I thought that was very slick. That didn't get nearly as much play or really kind of come together as much in the messaging. I didn't figure that out until afterwards. But there were two things that I did want to call out about that day two keynote. That one of them I thought was interesting. I mean, it's good and it kind of left me wanting a little bit more, but I don't think that Microsoft can do it for me. It's the fact that now we can have not just Ubuntu, but two other very popular flavors of Linux running inside the Windows subsystem. I mean, that's impressive. And well, if you're a developer that doesn't do much with Linux, I don't use Windows. And so this doesn't really do a whole lot for me personally. But what it does do is it does show a significant change in how the team in Redmond treats Linux, which is, you know, vastly different than what it was when Ballmer was in charge. So
absolutely, yeah.
I think that's big. I feel like I'm getting too old here when I say this one because I feel like I'm getting just curmudgeon and everything. But they talked about this new design thing called the Fluent Design, and it looked cool. And they talked about motion and 3D and how, we're getting these translucent windows back that we had in Vista. I thought those were bad, but okay. It kind of irritated me watching it because I'm just like, do you realize that you did Metro, you called it Metro, and then you had to change it to Modern, and you didn't really followed it, but you never really kind of followed through on it after that first build that you did talking about Metro and really showing it off. I mean, there was some documentation and stuff that was there, but you didn't really kind of hammer it home. You didn't really kind of keep pushing on it. And then, taking that one step further, you see, so just to finish that one thought, forgive me if I'm a little skeptical of your commitment to design, your design language and stuff outside of giving me the tools to do it, aside from just what you're doing and how you're building your apps. Kind of seems more like that was a sales pitch on here's how we do our apps. And I'm like, hey, that's great, but what are you going to give me and let me do with that? It just seemed way too early to talk about that because they didn't have stuff that was there for us to play with as like Windows developers now or web developers. Now, the other side of it, too, is that I went one step further with it, and I dug in the Office UI Fabric stuff, and I watched one of the sessions from the Office UI Fabric, a little theater session that they did at Build, and I think the guy's name was Micah that talked about it, and he alluded to Fluent, the new Fluent design, the way he said it in his session was that, he wasn't sure if it was public yet, if it was out yet, so he was going to be careful what he said. I guess he didn't watch the keynote or was aware that they were going to announce it. But he talked about how there's changes coming to the Office UI fabric design to match what they're doing with Fluent. And so I just, that part of me just kind of sat back, kind of slouched down in my chair, and I'm like, are you freaking kidding me? Because you now have, in the last 2 years now, we've had the Office UI fabric came out with their initial design. At the time, we just called it Office UI Fabric, but under the covers, it later kind of got a name of MDL1, which is the Modern Design Language 1. And then last year, they did a reset on the UI to kind of change some stuff around from stuff that they learned, and all the old CSS didn't match the new CSS, and so you had to do a lot of changes, and that was referred to as the Modern Design Language 2, or MDL2. So if you're a developer, you're a web developer using the Office UI Fabric, and you've looked in the repo and you see references to MDL1 or MDL2, that's what that is. And now I'm seeing a third one. So now in 3 years, I'm seeing the design language change yet again. Now, some of the stuff they're saying, hey, look, don't worry, developers, it's not going to be a big change for you. You know, we're going to take care of the CSS and it's not going to be that much of an impact. Again, forgive me if I am not really believing you, because you haven't really had the best track record on that story for us. I mean, even the way that you said, hey, look, you know, Office UI Fabric, we're going to focus on it with React, but we're going to extract everything and make a JavaScript library and a CSS library for you to use. But hey, the JavaScript library hasn't been updated in 3 months, and it really is a piece of crap to use. So today I'm just like, you know, forgive me if I don't believe that, but then I'm just like, and granted, if this isn't supposed to make an impact on me as a developer, but you're really going to change the UI on this again on your end users and trying to, you know, tweak stuff up a bit? And it's like, I don't get it. I don't understand. I don't think that the design side at Microsoft really has that much of staying power. And I don't think that changing the end user experience that much over a course of a couple of years is really that good of an idea for adoption and such. And so, I mean, I'm not saying that, hey, no, you're not allowed to change. Once you've done it, you're stuck there. I live in this web and cloudy world that changes and very frequently, but I still think that that kind of adoption, when you're talking about adoption and that kind of stuff, I think.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I guess that's fair. I guess the way I looked at it was, I get that Office UI Fabric and all of that sort of stuff has come out of the Office group and productivity, and mostly it's web, right? Mm-hmm. It's building web apps. From what I took from Fluent was that it's all about native apps and integration in the OS, and I sort of saw those two as not even connected. And it wasn't until I spoke to you that I really thought about Office UI Fabric being in the same boat.
Well, and so here's the thing, though. This is the part that really irritates me about Microsoft's direction with this, and that's there. If that's true, if Fluent is designed for Windows and Windows-based apps, and not so much for web.
Well, no, devices and native.
Okay, yeah. So devices and native and Windows and basically everything. So native. We'll just call it native because that's what you just said, right? Is that fair?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I think so. Yeah.
So
yeah.
And yes, Office UI Fabric is native because it's everything for Office, and it's also for Office clients, both on Mac and on Windows. But then it's also heavily leveraged inside of Office 365. But when we pivot and we look at, or let's look at the at what the competition does. And Google's got their design language called Material Design. And that is, you could rename Material Design for Google Design Language. Google's got native stuff. They got Android, they've got Chrome OS, they've got Chrome. And then you turn around and you got a bunch of different web properties. And every single one of their web properties Matt uses the exact same design schematics and design rules of Material Design the same way that Material Design Spec does for all their native stuff. And so this is the part to me where I look at it and just go, it's stable. Material Design came out either right after or right about the same time that Metro was announced from Microsoft. And it hasn't changed. The rules haven't changed. They're all still the same. And I think that there's something to that, especially when it comes to design. There's something to that. When you move my cheese, you know, when I want to go use my Xbox, or when I want to go, you know, use Netflix, and all of a sudden there's this brand new UI, and I'm just like, you look at it first and you're like, ah, shit, what the hell did you guys just do?
Yeah, that's fair.
Features is one thing.
No, it is.
But I don't know.
It is a big, that is a good call about Google, about being more consistent across their devices and you know, and their web properties. It's so it goes to show it's not impossible to do, which is which is good, I guess. So maybe, yeah, we'll see. We'll see if that happens. I guess it's the Windows folks leading the charge on this new Fluent design language, and we'll see if the rest of Microsoft toes the line. But that's basically been their problem, you know, for many years, right? Is different groups going off doing different things.
That's the part. That's one of the other things that I'm concerned about now. It's just, all right, now we got Windows going off and doing something. Is Office going to follow suit, or are they going to do their own thing? So we're going to have an Office UI and we're going to have a Windows UI. So I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
So,
yeah.
Okay. So I'll get off my sandbox there. But I mean, was there other stuff in the keynote or specific sessions that you thought were interesting that you attended? Or?
Well, a couple of things. One final thing on the keynote, the stuff they did with Cirque du Soleil and HoloLens. I mean, we all knew HoloLens was going to be a thing, that they were going to really push, you know, mixed reality, they started calling it. But what I did think was interesting about that was they seemed very defensive. And the reason I say that is the other guy that looks like Joe Belfiore came out and said mixed reality and is the new word that they're using, not augmented reality, which is what HoloLens used to use, which is, you know, you're overlaying things on the real, on the existing real world, and not virtual reality, which is, you know, you put on a set of goggles and you're in a different reality. But this mixed reality is really the spectrum of all of those things. It goes all the way from, you know, augmented reality all the way through to virtual reality. And I thought that was a really interesting message and position to take, because basically they're being trounced in the VR world by a lot of other players. And it felt like they were struggling to remain relevant in that conversation, and that people were writing them off, because most of the rest, like 90% of the maybe 95% of the conversation is about virtual reality, mm-hmm. not augmented reality. And it seemed like they were trying to get into that conversation about virtual reality. And so by calling it this mixed reality, they sort of made up the spectrum that they want to play, that they basically, you know, it's a classic case of great marketing is like, well, not great marketing. A classic way of good marketers is, you know, don't say you're playing a different game. Just make the ballpark bigger so that you're in it. And so that felt a little bit desperate, I thought. They've actually got a really good product. Like HoloLens is and the whole augmented reality technology is pretty sweet. But it just felt like they were trying to scramble for some relevancy in the rest of the conversation going on in the industry around virtual reality, which I thought was a bit lame. But maybe that was just me. Mm. But they showed a pretty cool demo of Cirque du Soleil, of some envisioning, you know, new shows and all the sort of stuff that they're doing with Cirque du Soleil. Great practical application of HoloLens, I thought. Which seemed pinned on a real scenario, as opposed to, oh yeah, I'm going to fix this really complicated jet engine using this, you know, magnificent mixed reality tool, which just seemed a bit far flung for me. But Cirque du Soleil, at least they showed a great example of how they use it, which seemed pretty realistic.
Yeah, it definitely did. It reminded me a lot of the demo that they showed at the Ignite conference last year with the couple that was at the real doing the renovations or changes in their kitchen. I can't remember which company they were associated with, but I mean, it was very much the same way for that. I guess for me, HoloLens, the people that I know that have played with it, they talk about it as kind of cool. No one is really doing. I haven't talked to anyone or worked with anybody that's doing a real application that you could, you know, for an organization. It still feels like this is that the audience they're speaking to when they're doing a keynote like that is very small. And that to me just, relatively speaking, compared to the other stuff they were talking about, it seemed really small. And there were some other pieces that I thought would have been, I would have liked to have seen highlighted in the keynote for on those things. But I mean, yeah, it's, I don't know much about the VR, AR, MR space now. I can't say too much about it. I thought it was interesting, but I was like, that's kind of cool. But you know, it's not me. It's like I don't like talking to my
really
phone.
Relevant for me either.
I'm not a Cortana person. I'm not a Siri person. I don't use that stuff. But I don't know.
Yeah, fair enough. No, and to be fair, I'm not really that into it either. It's more just interesting than seeing it tick along.
Yeah.
So that was in the keynote. One session that I really that I went to, which I thought was really cool, was Taylor Brown's new session that he did on the last day, I think, of Build on Friday, about containerization and things like that and what Microsoft are up to. And they had a bunch of really interesting announcements that I'll run through really quickly that I thought were really good. So Windows container support for Kubernetes is in alpha. There's some limitations on it right now, but you can go to kubernetes.io/docs/getting-started-guides/windows. We'll put the link in the show notes. Or it's in one of my tweets from Friday, May the 12th, if you want to go take a look at it. So there's alpha support for Windows containers and Kubernetes right now, which is kind of nice. Another announcement that they talked about was Linux containers with Hyper-V isolation. So this is the ability for Windows Server hosts to run Linux containers using Hyper-V isolation. So that was really cool. Any container regardless of OS. So you'll be able to run Windows containers, Linux containers. They do it with this, you know, you get a choice of Linux kernels, so you could choose, you know, obviously which one you boot the container on, but it's all done through Hyper-V isolation. And they've got this really thin virtualization stack that they do it on. So it's fast spin up, it's nice and quick, and it's got a fair amount of isolation between different things. But that was really cool, I thought. Something else he talked about was the Windows subsystem for Linux coming to Windows Server. So far, the Linux subsystem, the Windows subsystem for Linux, or WSL, as they're calling it, they're trying to get away from Bash on Windows because it's not just Bash. Bash is the shell. You can have any shell you like, but it's really the Windows subsystem for Linux. So you can run Ubuntu, SUSE, and Fedora subsystem on Windows, like you saw in the keynote. That was all on Windows 10. They're bringing that to Windows Server as well, so that you'll be able to manage. So you'll be able to manage your servers using, you know, Bash or whatever your shell of choice is on that side of things as well.
That's really cool. I have to go back and watch that session. I saw that he was presenting. I knew you were going to that, but that's cool to hear you say it was one of your favorite ones. I was curious what they talked about in there.
Now, here's the killer one that they talked about, which I'm surprised this didn't get any press that I could see. This was Windows Server Insiders program coming soon, aka summer. So you know how in Windows 10 there's an Insiders program and you can get fast ring builds for Windows 10?
Yeah.
They're doing the same for Windows Server.
Wow.
And the idea is that they'll release 3 or 4 times a year for Windows Server.
Jeez, that's a big change. That's a really big change.
And it doesn't mean that you have to go to the latest build every time, right? But it's like, this is the way they're going to increase the cadence of you seeing new stuff in Windows Server so that so that they can get feedback earlier, right? So if you think about it, right, imagine all this containerization support, right? We're having to wait quite a while until a new version of Windows Server comes out to get technical previews or some of the latest updates. This way, you'll be able to, you know, as a developer or as a IT pro who wants to see new stuff coming in Windows Server and get ready for it ahead of releases, you'll be able to subscribe to the Insiders program and get fast ring type updates. Now, what was really interesting is there was somebody in the press in the room when that asked about this and said, does this mean that Windows Server is going to, you know, evergreen versions like Windows 10, right? So that things get upgraded, you know, there'll be no more Windows Server 2020 or 21 or 22. And he dodged the question hard.
Really?
So, yeah.
That's a pretty big change, Bonkers. I guess, you know, we don't see that. We're not seeing it so much with Windows 10. I mean, we kind of are, where Windows 10 is getting these updates, but I mean, I wonder if we're going to see like a big drop of Windows 10 or Windows 11 or 12, whatever it's going to end up being. But I mean, yeah, that's a big drop for a server product, though.
I actually thought it was really cheeky of the guy from the press who asked this, because it was after the session and everybody was asking questions up the front, and as a press person at a conference like that, you're supposed to make sure you're known that you're press, right? So people are on the record. Yeah. And he didn't do that up front, and Taylor handled it very well, don't get me wrong, but definitely dodged the question. And when he did find out that he was from PR or press, right, suggested he go get in touch with their press person at Microsoft to get the official answer on it. But yeah, it was pretty much a dead giveaway that at least the way I took it was that it's a dead giveaway that Windows Server's going the same way.
Oh, that's pretty big. I'm surprised that I hadn't seen that trickle across the interwebs in the last few days.
I don't think it was really announced outside of this session. One thing I really took away from it though was from the session was that there's really been this re-emphasis of innovation on the server products. And it's being led by containerization and the way apps are deployed and managed and run and things like that. And that was really, really good to see. And it's also really good to see that the Windows server teams have sort of picked it up and are running with it, right? That they're doing these things, which was really good.
Yeah, it definitely seems to be something that would, well, it seems like it's going to be something, this containerization is going to really make their lives a heck of a lot better in terms of being able to deploy custom apps and stuff to Windows Server, because it makes it easier for them to secure them, to be able to isolate what these custom apps are doing. They were doing it with VMs before, but I mean, I think that this makes the people who are building Windows Server makes their lives a lot easier.
Yeah, absolutely. And the good bit, right, is if you're a Windows shop, if you're a Microsoft shop, you can go deploy Windows servers as you normally do. But the work they're doing with containerization and things means that, hey, if you need to run a Linux container for something because it, from a vendor that only does it on Linux, you can do that as well. Mm. And you don't necessarily have to run a bunch of Linux boxes to do so, which is kind of cool. Mm. One other tidbit I found, I can't remember which session this was in. I'm trying to remember now. No, I can't remember which session it was, but somebody said there are 3 billion minutes of Skype video calls made every day.
3 billion?
Video minutes as well. Not just audio minutes, video minutes.
3 billion Skype or Skype for Business?
Skype.
Wow, that's old.
So it was, yes, consumer Skype. Hmm. So, yeah, that was, oh, that's right. It was in a session about this new thing they've got called adaptive cards, which is a new design specification for how you say what's in a card that goes to a user through things like into Outlook for message cards, or a card with buttons and images or text that goes through Skype or Slack or Kick Messenger or something like that. There's this new thing called adaptivecards.io, I think it is, where you can go check it out. But yeah, in that session, the guy mentioned there are 3 billion minutes of Skype video calls made per day. And my tweet was, 3 billion minutes of Skype video calls are made per day. Oh my God, that's a lot of can you hear me now?
Well, it'd be even more if you were measuring it with Skype for Business, but that's okay.
Yeah, that's right. You can't get video working on that. What are you talking about? Anyway, so yeah, Adaptive Cards was one of the sessions I went to on the final day, and it was actually really cool. It's an effort that Microsoft are going to try and push with all the different industry players to come up with a JSON-based standard for how cards are laid out in different platforms in a common card format. So that when I say I wanted to send you a card in Slack, I just send you the same card that I would send you as I did with Skype for Business, but Slack would know what to do with it and render it for Slack versus Skype for Business, who'd render it, or Skype, who'd render it the way they did. It's actually pretty interesting. It's developing really well. Kick Messenger are on board with it, as well as some other industry players. So definitely check it out. If you're into bots, it's pretty important. So.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds a lot like some of the bot stuff that I've heard Richard Zerga talk about on his podcast.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, before we move on, let's break for a quick word from one of our fantastic sponsors.
What if you could take any process your teams use to get work done and make it happen automatically? What if you could save countless hours and help people work better together? Nintex can make it happen. With a Nintex platform, work flows from person to person, system to system, to the cloud and back. And it flows in and out of the tools you use every day. With Nintex, work just flows, so your teams can work smarter, work faster, and be more connected than ever.
Okay, AC, anything else from Build we want to wrap up with before we move on?
I've got one thing here that I shouldn't say one bit of news because I've yet to watch the session yet, but I did read the blog post about it. Definitely seems like a really big deal, especially for developers and for a lot of the developers that you and I interact with, Office 365 and SharePoint style developers. And then I got one more question for you before you have any other sessions you want to share. There was a session or there was an announcement in an associated session from Vittorio from the Azure AD team where developers may be familiar that when you want to authenticate with Azure AD today, there's been an authentication library that we've used over many years called ADAL. So Azure Active Directory Authentication Library. And it's only really been targeted in the past. It's only been targeted at the Azure AD side. It's not been targeted at like the Microsoft account or what's called converged authentication and for consumer services and such. Available in a lot of different SDKs and toolkits and stuff from JavaScript to iOS to Android to .NET. Well, last year they teased something out called the Microsoft Authentication Library or MSAL, and leading up to Build, so I can't remember who pointed this out to me. I think it was Victor Whelan and a little Slack team that we're in. But I noticed that the JavaScript repo for the Microsoft Authentication Library, the .NET repo, and another one, and GitHub from the Azure AD team both had a tremendous amount of commits and that had been added to those repos in the month leading up to Build. And then sure enough, it has now been announced that the Microsoft Authentication Library, or MSAL, is now production ready for preview. So essentially it's ready for you. It's in preview mode. The way I read that is it's released in preview, but you can use it in production within your apps. Just know that it's in preview. So to me, it kind of is like a mix of, hey, we're GA with some stuff we're still working on. But
with some caveats. Yeah.
But there's like a .NET, there's an iOS, I believe there's a .NET Core, a JavaScript. There's a couple of different implementations to it, but there is a session on it from Build by Vittorio Bertucci. Hope I get that right. I know it's close.
He's going to come and strangle you with his manly locks.
Oh, he's got, beautiful hair. But anyway, so he's. Yeah. I thought that was a really big update. That was a really big update because a lot of us have been really looking like, we know this is coming, we know this is it, but we haven't heard anything about it for many, many months. And so, did you go in a different direction? I mean, there was so much like looking into it that I know Paul Schaeflin and I we even found a job posting on it for someone to come in and help actually finish MSAL on the Microsoft career site. It's like, oh, so I wonder if it's stalled, they need help, or what does that mean? But
interesting.
Hey, it's good. It's very cool to see where it is. And so I'm eager to have a play with it.
Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah. Nice. Yeah, I saw Vittorio cruising around. Had a chat with him on the show floor, and always in fine form.
Hey, I got a question for you. Did you attend the SharePoint Framework session? We had talked to Vesa about it. I know he was doing a session. Did you attend the SharePoint Framework session?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, it was good. You know, we covered all the points in our podcast a couple of episodes ago. There wasn't anything outside of that I learned from that session. But, it was done by Dan Kogan and Vesa Juvenen. And they talked about all the new things that we went through in the podcast with Vesa the other day on. And I think the reception was quite good, actually. I was pleasantly surprised with the turnout to the session. It's always a bit weird, Build, because, you know, for office developers and SharePoint developers, it's a bit of an odd event. And so it's always a bit dubious about, you know, how many people are going to show up for a session like that. But they had actually surprisingly good turnout. And they went through the updates and things. You know, they're making good progress is really what I'd summarize it as. For me, it's a bit of a disappointment that they're really stuck on replacing things that we've had for years versus new stuff. But it's great that they're bringing the new model up to speed with what people need to build real applications.
Yeah.
So I'm glad to see them chipping away at it.
Yeah. I talked to a few people that were in that session, and I guess that for me, it's agreed. It's good to see this new development model getting the same feature parity of what we could do in previous development models with SharePoint. Of course, this is just a preference thing. I just prefer that the team not, you know, talk it up so much like it's new stuff and, you know, look how great this is when it's really just, hey, you know how you used to be able to do that? Like, yeah, you can do that over here too. So more of a reason to jump on this model.
Yeah, exactly. So. Yeah. And I don't think there's any shame in pitching it that way either, because it's like, hey, there's a new model. It's a much better way to develop things for online. And here are all these new capabilities we've added to it from that you were able to do in the past. So it's a more viable alternative. Mm. But tomorrow is the SharePoint Virtual Summit event. Is that what you call
it?
I can't remember the exact name. That's on tomorrow. So I suspect they will cover those same things again in that stuff, as well as probably all the improvements they talked around with OneDrive, with what used to be called Selective Sync, I suppose. I don't know what that's called now. But you know how in Windows it went away? If you had a really big OneDrive, you could sync just some parts of it in Windows 8, yep. And then they took that away. I think they're adding it back. Yeah. Was the announcement at Build? So
it's good to hear.
I think I think a lot of the plumbing work that they're doing in OneDrive is enabling this to do better, you know, better support for not synchronizing your entire 1 terabyte OneDrive to your laptop, and just being able to pick and choose which comes down.
Makes sense.
In Dropbox, they call it Smart Sync, but I can't remember the exact word they used for it.
On demand.
But I suspect that on demand, right? Yeah, that was it. Yeah, good call. So I think they'll talk about that tomorrow, and they've also got a few other bits and pieces up their sleeve that I know about, but don't want to give the game away.
No, we can't do that.
We'll reconvene on this show a little later.
Absolutely. So that's good. Overall, it was, hey, the keynotes were better this year than they were last year. At least day one was a heck of a lot better than both keynotes last year. Day two wasn't really targeted for you and me, but some really cool announcements. Definitely was big theme this year was a lot more Azure stuff, big, big investments around artificial intelligence, and Microsoft Graph really shined. So, this year Build. So that was a lot of really good news for a lot of people.
Definitely. Yeah. So overall, pretty decent event. Final words on it. It was much bigger than previous Builds. Somebody said there were 6,000 people there, but I suspect that includes all of the Microsoft staff and show staff as well. But it definitely felt bigger. And I think that was because they had a bigger venue this time. And they also didn't do hardware giveaways like they have in the past. And so I think that's meant that they've able to invite more people because obviously they've had sponsors in the past that have stumped up for that hardware. And so it felt like a nice little limit that they've removed. And so it was good. Like it was much, much better, bigger show floor, more partners there, which was really good. Much bigger Microsoft presence than normal on the show floor, which I thought was a nice change.
Very cool.
It's no ignite in terms of expo floor size, but definitely better for Build.
Very cool. Very cool.
Hey, before we go on to our picks and start wrapping up, why don't we hear from one of our sponsors? Give CodeShip Pro a try. More teams than ever are using Docker and Linux for their .NET applications. CodeShip Pro is a fully customizable, continuous integration and delivery service in the cloud with the best support for any team that is using .NET and Docker together, and can run builds on Linux environments. CodeShip Pro comes with ready-to-use integrations for Azure, including Azure Container Services, and more. It also offers a free, convenient local CLI tool that allows you to run your builds locally and is the only hosted CI/CD that lets you build your own environment, giving you the most control and flexibility no matter what tool or stack you're trying to use. Check out CodeShip Pro's free plan that grants 100 builds per month, unlimited projects, and unlimited users. Open source projects are always free on CodeShip. Visit CodeShip.com today or check out CodeShip.com/features/pro to learn more. All right, AC, it's that time of the show, buddy. It's what everybody's been waiting for. Let's not disappoint them.
No, I won't. I got two of them. Now, one of them's going to be a little weird because it is AWS right after build, but it's always nice to see what everybody else is doing out there. So I have...
Okay, you start.
I got one here. It's called the AWS Online Tech Talks. If you go to aws.com/about-aws/event/monthly-webinar-series, or if you just go to our show notes, I will have a link to it in the show. The AWS Online Tech Talks is a section of live online presentations that cover a broad range of topics at varying technical levels. These tech talks feature technical sessions led by AWS solutions architects, engineers, live demos, customer samples, et cetera, et cetera. Looking at the list, I mean, you've got things that are showing up every week, some of them multiple times a week, some of them multiple times a day, or multiple sessions a day. But it's kind of cool to be able to see things like you got one that's coming up tomorrow or May the 16th, so the day that this episode comes out. A deep dive on Amazon EC2 F1 instances. Those are the FPGA instances. So it's cool to be able to find a little spot. And we got a lot of videos and stuff we have access to from the Microsoft Virtual Academy and Channel 9. Nice to have something like this from AWS so you can kind of see what the entire landscape looks like.
Crazy. That sounds like a good resource.
How about you? I've got another one, but I'll let you go first.
Yeah, sure. So mine is called Author Brian Schull on Piloting the SR71. So this is quite a long talk. It's an hour 10 or an hour 12. It's kind of, a lecture that he did at Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory, whichever way you want to say it. And he's a SR-71 pilot, one of only, 80-something pilots that's ever flown an SR-71, flew it for a long time. What's really interesting about him is he got shot down near the Cambodian border during the Vietnam War and was almost killed and made a miraculous recovery. And people spent the whole time saying he'd never fly again and do all this sort of stuff. And then he went on to pilot the SR-71. So he bounced back from almost certain death and ended up becoming a prolific SR-71 pilot. He's written a famous book on the SR-71 called Sled Driver, Flying the World's Fastest Jet, which is quite a popular book for those interested in the SR-71. And also, you may recall the sort of internet meme story that went on about a Cessna pilot asking LA Tower for a ground speed check and then being gazumped by a beach aircraft and then some sort of F-16 or something and then an SR-71 just came in and just ruined their day. So he was the guy that wrote that story, and he retells the story at minute 56, I think it is, of his 1 hour 10 talk, if you're interested in going and hearing it firsthand from him. But really interesting lecture about his life and as part of that, obviously, piloting the SR-71. Just very inspirational given the adversities the adversity he's faced in his life.
Yeah, it was good. I saw that posted on Facebook again this week, and I've read it multiple times, heard the story multiple times, but I think every time it pops up, I still chime in, go take a look. I love the shot back and forth between the main guy, the pilot, and the radio guy and Walter, and the guy in the tower when he's like, get for a ground speed check, and he says something like, 1,926 miles an hour across the ground or something like that. And Walter's like, yeah, that's good. I said, our instruments have us a little bit closer to 2,000. The tower's like, yeah, I think you got better hardware than us. You'll have a good time up there.
It was just, it was possibly like, maybe not the first, but what a fantastic troll. Like, brilliant, perfectly executed. Just, you know, some Top Gun pilot and his little pissant fighter jet down below. And these guys are like, stick it to the guy.
That was a good one.
It was pretty good.
Hey, I got another.
Anyway, what do you got?
I got another one here. I think that you will like it personally. Is there's two of these that I now want to go through. A couple of months ago, I found one called, I said one of the things I want to do in 2017 was spend a little bit more time and learn the language Go or Golang. And I found a thing called gobyexample.com, which is kind of walks you through a little tutorials of playing with Go. This one, another one here by the OpenShift team. This is kubernetesbyexample.com, and it walks through everything. Pods, labels, replication controllers, deployment, services, service discovery, health checks, environment variables, namespaces, volume, secrets, logging, jobs, and nodes. So kind of walk through like step by step by step on all the stuff that you can do with it. And yeah, it's a good little learning hands-on resource. Not so much of teaching, but more or less just like run through and do it, and that's how you're going to learn. So I've carved out some time to go play with this and give it a shot the same way they've shown it in here.
That's really cool. I'm definitely going to check out Go by Example. Just a quick reminder before we wrap this one up: go enter our competition for a Surface laptop. And two Xbox One S bundles. Go up to our contact link on our website, submit a form, and attach the URL to your WAV or MP3 file telling us why you like the Cloud Show or dislike it, or like AC or dislike CJ, whatever it happens to be. Please let us know. We'd love to hear from you, and we'd love to have our listeners part of our special episode 200 that we have coming up. So just take 30 seconds out of your day and go do that. We would very much appreciate it. And hey, you might walk away with some sweet, sweet, sweet swag.
I wish I could submit. My Xbox One is on the fritz, but okay.
Oh no.
Yeah. At any rate, if anybody knows any details about a Blu-ray drive that's dying and how, if it can be replaced and how it can be replaced without sending it in, I would really like to hear about it.
Anyway, well, if we get a dubious submission from a guy called Chandru Anil, we'll know it's you.
Chandru Anil. How about John Connell, my real name?
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, that's fair enough.
Stephen Connell might submit one.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, exactly.
Cool.
Yeah, that's funny. Nice. All right, AC, great show. Thanks for the time chatting about Build and all the interesting announcements and bits and bobs. We will be back next week with a news show. And then I think the following week, we're going to follow up with an interview with a fellow Kiwi and prolific analyst out there on the internet about cloud computing, Ben Keeps. So definitely stay tuned for that. Your mileage may vary. This program is subject to change. And yeah. So thanks
again.
Good
stuff. Good talking to you, man.
Catch you soon. Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show. We'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as an MP3 or WAV file and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is brought to you by Keith Ritchie. For more information on Keith's music, head to music.kritchie.com. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and Google Play Store by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up for our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.